Hi, hello. On this episode of The Dunker Spot, we're going to be talking WNBA playoffs. We have a crucial game five between the Aces and the Fever, so we'll be digging into what we're going to be looking for in that matchup. We're going to salute the Minnesota Lynx, and we're obviously going to salute the Phoenix Mercury, who have advanced to the WNBA Finals. We're going to react to the WNBA All-Rookie Team. I have some thoughts and a rant coming, so just be warned. And on the NBA side, Media Day is here, so Steve and I are going to chop it up about some quotes that stood out to us over those media sessions. Hope you enjoyed this episode of the pod. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are now a part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you to all the dunkers for embracing your bounce. Been a minute, 4, 5, 6, 7, but ready to go. Time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. And for the new people chiming in, again, I'm Nikias Duncan. I have been covering the NBA, I guess, technically since 2010, if I'm going to go back to the NBA Talk Facebook page, but covering it in an official capacity since 2015, which means I'm entering year 10. That feels weird to say out loud. And been covering the WNBA full throttle since 2022. Just give the quick bio at the top. Steve, yourself?
Steve Jones, played college basketball at Arizona State and UNLV. Did video coordinator work for the Memphis Grizzlies and the Brooklyn Nets, and was an assistant coach with the Brooklyn Nets. And I'm an all-around great guy. And
there we go.
I'm here to help Nikias through his Unk era.
Unk MT over here. Yeah, that is true. That is true. Okay, just quick bio. Again, we are the Dunker Spot. We cover the NBA and the WNBA in depth. As we are in the W playoffs, naturally, we're starting with W playoff talk, and then we'll flow into NBA talk. Once the NBA regular season starts, that will flip. We'll start with the NBA, and if we have any W news, that'll be in the second half. So just to get yourself pumped and primed for the dunkers that have been rocking with us, you know how we vibe already. So what to do there at the top before we flowed into some playoff discourse, Steve, because we have had entertaining playoffs on the W side so far. We have had one team already punch their ticket to the WNBA Finals. Shout out to the Phoenix Mercury. We'll talk about them a little bit. We have another game left. We have a pivotal game five coming later today as we record on this Tuesday morning. We have the Indiana Fever and the Las Vegas Aces still going at it. That series tied 2 games apiece. And just kind of zooming out with the series so far, it has been very physical. Neither head coach has been particularly pleased with how this series has been ref. And as two individuals that generally don't like getting into ref talk, it does seem at least a little bit pertinent in light of what both Stephanie White and Becky Hammon have said. Recent Asia Wilson alluding to a conversation she had with Aaliyah Boston during Game 3, I believe, about Asia's whistle. To the other series, Cheryl Reeve got suspended for various amounts of things, but again, we'll get to that a little bit later. But it's been an interesting series on that front. But to the actual on-court product, I have really enjoyed this Asia Wilson Aaliyah Boston battle, Steve. It's a contrast of styles. They're two all W caliber bigs. Obviously, Asia's coming off of her record 4th MVP right now. And watching those two duke it out has been interesting. It's been cool watching Asia try to find her pockets of space and try to figure out how to get past and get through Aaliyah Boston with the strongest she is. With Aaliyah, she is sealing everybody underneath the basket. Game one started with Melissa Smith getting that matchup. As Steve can attest to, I did not like that, though I understood the logic of having Melissa Smith take those bumps. Asia work as a roamer off of Natasha Howard, etc. Aaliyah Boston made quick work, and we got to the end of the first quarter, and Asia Wilson was on Aaliyah Boston. It's like, well, I guess we have seen the end of that. But like watching those two battle for position has been fun. We are coming off of this Game 4 win for the Indiana Fever to save their season, where Aaliyah Boston becomes, I think, the second Fever player ever to have 20-10-5 in a playoff game. Tamika Catchings being the first. And if you would like to chuckle as a basketball fan, go to Tamika Catchings' basketball reference page. Just look at her steal and block numbers per season. Just look at those. See the whole thing. Do your YouTubes, do your Googles, and watch her play. But just look at the steal and block numbers. I promise you, you'll cackle. But that's kind of where I start with this one, Steve. And I think heading into this pivotal Game 5, not to be too reductive, I think the game is going to heavily swing based on which big is able to kind of establish themselves on both ends of the floor.
Obviously, they're both key to what the Aces and the Fever want to do. I think what's going to be interesting is who can establish themselves first, who can get positioning first, who's got the shot going, who's able to catch at the elbow and drive and finish. But I think zooming out from those two, right? Like, obviously, the Fever are going to need a good game from Leah Boston. If you're the Aces, we need to make it tough on Leah Boston. We have to defend without fouling, but we have to make sure that we're decisive with our defense. And I think one of the things when it comes to, you know, people can talk about fouls, that's fine. Can you stay decisive in your coverage? So over the course of this series, we saw early game one, not as decisive. Are we in a drop? Are we switching? How many people do we want to switch? We saw the switches ramp up. If you get into a foul trouble scenario, how do people feel comfortable with guarding Leah Boston? What does that open up for Indiana? On the flip side, if you were able to contain Leah Boston, contest, defend without fouling, you can put all that focus on Kelsey Mitchell. And if I'm the Aces, that's the person I need to make sure does not have a good day today, because we've seen what Kelsey Mitchell's shot making can do for the Fever, especially in this series. It's physical, real hoop type series. And so when she's able to get off ball, get off dribble handoffs, move, cut, get in the paint, make shots without necessarily having to run a big set, it makes it tough for the Aces. And so I think if you're the Aces, you got to look in on Kelsey Mitchell. If you are the Fever, guard's got to have a tough time. For Las Vegas. Jack Young can't have fun. Chelsea Gray can't have fun. Jewel Lloyd can't have fun. Asia, you're great. We can try and make it tough for you at some point, but they have to have a tough time. Leah Boston, do your best, and we make sure that we keep this in the half court, keep it physical, we bother your off-ball movement, we push on the other end, and that's how we get it done. The terms are here. It's just who's going to do it in these 40 minutes.
And I guess the quick question I'll toss to you, Steve, is on the Aces guard front, is it just make the shots that you have, or is there anything differently you'd like to see from them in terms of approach, or maybe Becky drawing some stuff up to free them up with some off-ball stuff? Is there anything you want to see different from the guards?
Just stay decisive. I think there are moments where Indiana's physicality has bothered some of the dribble handoffs, some of the pick and roll, and Indiana's been able to do screen navigation. You haven't been able to get to the big and pick and roll. You haven't been able to get some of those late switches where you can hit the roller late or kind of find your comfort spot. So I think it's just kind of doing the better job of doing what you do. Jackie Young, be decisive. Chelsea Gray, get to your spots and find a rhythm to where you're a threat. Now Indiana has to react.
Okay, I got you on that. Like, I was looking at the handoffs in particular, going back to the game four, been keeping track of them all series long, but particularly in that game four, one, I should just pause and say, Lexi Hull is defending her tail off in this series. She is playing her tail off in this series. And I know there is, understandably, a lot of talk about, again, tapping the foul button, I'm sorry, but like the off-ball fouls that she has drawn, the volume of those that she's drawn when trying to navigate. And I can understand how frustrating that can be. But even that kind of speaks to the motor and the effort that she's playing with. And she is genuinely a really good screen navigator. Like, the amount of possessions that we've seen live, and the broadcast has shown replays of the Aces, as they like to do, bring the ball up the floor. It's like a fake pick and roll in the middle of the floor. Give the ball to Asia. They flow into an empty side handoff with Jackie Young. And the early work that Lexi Hull is doing to get in front of Jackie Young, then the release, so I have time to navigate. Then I reattach to Jackie Young and get over. Asia can't really screen her. And so now it is Jackie Young with Lexi Hull just in her jersey. Depending on who's spaced to the opposite side of Jackie Young, there's a Fever defender at the nail or around the free throw line area ready to dig and plug holes there. And Jackie, there has been a lot of early pickups for her with her dribble. She's not being able to access the paint as easily as we're accustomed to. And so I wonder on that front, something that stood out to me in, I want to say, game two, was the Aces going to more flat spacing. They kept someone in the dunker spot. Want to make sure those wings are extra clear to create a little bit more space. I wonder if that's a button that they tap a little bit more of in this game five to make sure, okay, Jackie, we are going to give you all the room in the world to explore. Because I think really good stat line in game four, but it didn't fit, like, I don't think her impact offensively matched what the stat line was for her, because it felt like her scoring in particular came in spurts. She wasn't able to puncture the paint and really put a lot of pressure on Indiana's defense consistently. So to the overall, like, guard slash perimeter room point, Steve's bouncing off of, if you're able to get Jackie in more threatening positions more consistently, I wonder what that does to the Fever defense. And naturally, you're going to have... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I see you throwing out flat space and trying to trademark that early on in this one. I see, big dog. Oh, God.
I don't know about trademark. I didn't make that up. I'm still learning. But either way, like, I do wonder if that's a thing that the Aces tap into more. And I think just in general, to borrow from you, Steve, like, do we just see a little bit more pitch and catch instead of the traditional handoffs? I like to see Deja toss the ball to Jackie on the run, get her a move, so Lexi has a little bit more trailing to do in that front. Like, is that a subtle tweak they can make to get Jackie downhill a little bit more?
I think that could be something they do. I would like to see more hit heads, get some better tempo against the Fever's full court pressure, so you're not dribbling it, getting into something at 17. Now you're down to 10. Just kind of play with more pace, more tempo. It helps when you get stops if you're the Aces. But the Fever have done a good job in transition. So again, that's kind of just where the battleground is. Can the Fever keep the Aces in the mud to a degree? And can they, you know, because the Fever are going to need some wiggle room to score in the half court. You know, the Aces have worked to be physical and defend. We know Kelsey and Lexi and Aaliyah have done really good jobs of attacking, but sometimes it can get limited. It can get interesting for the Fever in the half court, no matter how much they cut and they move. So for the Aces, defense has turned to offense. Fever probably feel the same way.
And I think to that point about the Fever trying to find a level of consistency in the half court in particular, I think that's where the Aaliyah Boston usage has been really interesting. Like, since Caitlin Clark's been down, obviously the ball has been in Aaliyah Boston's hands more. It's been in Kelsey Mitchell's hands more. But a lot of the Aaliyah touches, at least during the regular season, they were starting above the three-point line. Let's flow into a handoff. Let's get her at the elbow. And then maybe we can get her a low post touch later in the clock. Or she's driving from the elbow or driving from above the break. And she's good enough to do that. But that was one of the complaints I levied to you. I was like, I would love to see them. It doesn't even have to be exotic. Let's just get a cross screen for Aaliyah Boston so she can catch the ball 6 or 7 feet from the basket instead of all the high initiation that she's doing. Let's get some deeper touches so we can access the scoring portion of this too. And I think not only has Aaliyah gotten the ball more as the series has gone on, have numbers on that front, but not only has she gotten the ball more, she's catching the ball deeper to begin with, which again speaks to the level of early work that she is doing. The seals have been tremendous for her. She has put Asia under the basket. She has put Alyssa Smith underneath the basket. When we've gotten the Meg Gustafson minutes, she is also very Meg Gustafson on a few seals. She's doing her work, and they've also kind of sprinkled in. We have Aaliyah above the break. Let's get Lexi to set a screen. Let's get Kelsey Mitchell to set a screen. And let's at least see what the Aces do with it. If it's not just going to be a pure dump it down to Aaliyah, let's at least make the defense move a little bit and then flow into something, or just give Aaliyah Boston the ball. And so I like that. I think in terms of establishing Aaliyah Boston, keep with that kind of intentionality to get her the ball in deeper spots and make the Aces decide, can we handle this one-on-one? Are we going to continue to sprinkle in some of these double teams from the baseline that we saw in game four and that we saw a little bit in game three as well? Is that your two? Is that another two on the ball avenue? Because the Aces haven't wanted to put two on the ball with Kelsey Mitchell at the very least. And so is that another avenue to open things up in the half court, further enhance the cutting, and now the Aces are in trouble? I'm going to be keeping an eye on it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Is there anything else that kind of intrigues you about this matchup, Steve? Or anything else that you want to see in this game five?
No, I mean, we've seen four games of this. So the battle lines are drawn. We know exactly what's going to happen in this game five as far as how each team can win. Elimination games are weird. So it's time for someone to go to the finals.
That it is. Ooh, I do have a quick question for you, actually. Then I have a couple numbers that we can move to the next series. Back to the Aces guard room. I guess the Dana Evans / Jewel Lloyd dilemma. Which one do you think is more important heading into this game five?
Both.
Well, yes.
Both. Both in different ways. Go, well, like, what's the dilemma?
I think like the minute split was something that the great Cali Finn asked about after game four. With Jewel, I think it was over 30 for the first time in the series. Wasn't a heavy minute low for Dana Evans in that one. But to your point, like, both are obviously important. You need the shooting from Jewel. You need the shooting from Dana, too, but you definitely need the drives. So I think in an ideal world, both of them pop for the Aces in this game five, you know, from their point of view. But I do think, like, you don't have to choose one, but I guess who are you keeping a closer eye on between the two to get going? Is it the Dana drives? Is it the Jewel shot making?
It's Jewel Lloyd for me. I mean, because I think there's a comfort with playing Jewel Lloyd with different lineups because of the flashes she's shown activity-wise guarding Kelsey Mitchell during this series. And so I think there's a trust level there. So if Jewel Lloyd has it going offensively, that's going to be a pressure point. And then defensively, you have the trust to be able to defend multiple positions. I think Dan Evans is important, not just the drives, but if they're going to go under, get to a rescreen, either make a shot, turn the corner, and hit the roller. But I think this is one where you need Jewel Lloyd to kind of hit at a good level on both ends of the floor.
Okay, understood. And then just quickly for me on the Aaliyah Boston front, she had 10 total post-ups within games 1 and 2. She had 20 in game 3 and 4. She had 13 alone in that game for 1.2 points per possession on any trip featuring an Aaliyah Boston post up. Insane game from her on both ends of the floor. Just wanted to salute her on that one. To the other series that has wrapped up, the Phoenix Mercury, Steve, are in the WNBA Finals, a 3-1 series win. Did not come without a little bit of drama. The end of game 3 was a great surge and a great close for the Phoenix Mercury, but it did include an unfortunate injury to Nafisa Collier, did not appear in game 4. We then got Cheryl Reeve, understandably upset. She is eventually ejected from the game. Took her a little bit to get off the court because she was still understandably upset. There was a bit of a fan interaction. We got the post-game comments from Cheryl Reeve, in which she, among many things, called for a change of leadership on the officiating front. Said it was malpractice that officiating crew was deemed semifinals worthy. A lot of things. We got the game 4 suspension. We got a $15,000 fine for reporting from The Athletic as well. A lot happened there. But ultimately, an impressive series win for the Phoenix Mercury that defended their tail off. Quickly on the Alyssa Thomas front, Steve. Like, once she played well, 20 points, 8 rebounds, nearly 10 assists, nearly 3 steals per game in the series against what was the best team in the W this year in the Minnesota Lynx. First in offense, first in defense, first in net rating, efficiency off the charts, all of the things. Alyssa Thomas was freaking fantastic in that series. And she has been fantastic during this entire postseason run, which is a continuation of the fantastic regular season that she had. That was MVP worthy. Unfortunately, that came in a season where Fee was also MVP worthy and Asia ultimately won the MVP. It's just kind of tough on that front. But Alyssa Thomas has been ridiculous all year long with her playmaking, with her drives, with her defense. All three of those things popped. Again, overall in this postseason, they certainly popped in this series. And it feels like, for me, like, one, I think this conversation starts with Alyssa Thomas and how good she was and how much pressure she put on Minnesota on both ends. But even to the dry point, it has been a year of a lot more ball handling for Alyssa Thomas, something that we've talked about on the pod earlier this season. It's not the first time that she's ever been tasked with initiating the offense or running inverted pick and roll. This is the highest volume of inverted pick and roll that we've seen from her. And just watching the Mercury in key spots over and over, Monika Koa-Makani, come screen for Alyssa Thomas. Sammy Whitcomb, come screen for Alyssa Thomas. And let's see how you want to defend it. Do you want to switch this? Probably not. Are you showing cool? Are you in position early enough to persuade me to go a different way? Probably not. Oh, you are this time? I'm rejecting. Oh, you're trying to tweak how you want to show? That's fine. I will just hit your guard in the chest. We saw that in the Liberty series. We saw it a little bit in the Link series as well. Watching her adjust her process within these inverted looks has been a lot of fun for me overall this season. It popped for me in this series. And I think, again, just in general, she's just been really freaking good and just dictates a lot on both ends of the floor. So I wanted to start with a salute to Alyssa Thomas. But for you, Steve, what stood out to you about this series? What were some of your major themes?
Am I also allowed to talk about Alyssa Thomas, or I got to talk about something else?
No, please. I ain't trying to take Alyssa Thomas off the board. I just had thoughts.
We can stay right here. We can stick with the inverted. Hang on, buddy. I think the one thing about it is in both series for Phoenix, teams had a good solution for inverted pick and roll until they did not. And so this is not new for Alyssa Thomas. This is something she's done before. I think the difference is, one, you have more space, you have more dangerous people around you. And two, Phoenix does a really good job of mixing different parts in as far as how they set those screens and where they set those screens. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be low on the floor, near that free throw line, near that elbow, because you're giving Alyssa Thomas a gap in general. So you're not really sure if they're going to set it flat, like a step up, to where Alyssa Thomas can go either way. And you know, if your guard's on the wrong side, just turn in the corner. Now, either it's a layup or ability to make a kick. I think the thing for Alyssa Thomas that people have to pay attention to is how good of a passer she is and how quickly she sees the defense and gets it out. And that was key. I think the other thing is, you know, they could flip the angle at the last second. So you think you're in a good position. Now you're not. If you show that you cannot necessarily handle it, it gets really tricky because they'll just keep doing it until you figure out mm-hmm. how to stop it. You know, we've seen that in both series. I think the other thing about Alyssa Thomas is she looks to initiate contact. And so if you are the guard
that's defending the screener and you are showing, well, this Thompson's going to bump into you and open up that pop.
Mm-hmm.
That's either going to get Phoenix a shot or force a rotation. If you are guarding Lissa Thomas, given the gap you try and slide under, Lissa Thomas is going to bump into you, you know, as you try and cut her off and then get a spin, force some help, see what happens. She's really good at making those type of decisions. So I also want to salute Lissa Thomas. I think when you look at this Lynx-Mercury series, a lot of talk about game three. I'm sure we'll talk about game four. You got to talk about the fourth quarters. And you go back to game two. And I feel like game two is probably going to haunt the Minnesota Lynx in a way that is uncomfortable because they had that game and then they did not. And we saw what happened the rest of the way. It gets tricky, you know, I think because this is a Mercury team that does not go away and has confidence in their closing lineup. And so if you're not able to get to Sammy Wickham, that opens up a whole different thing because if Sammy Wickham is the screener, Alyssa Thomas is ball handling. You've got Satu Sabwe, Dewana Bonner, and Kalia Copper in space. And now, especially in the closeout game against the Lynx, the biggest thing that fourth quarter, the Mercury were 10 of 12 from the field. With eight assists. And so you're trying to decide, how do we handle the first level? How is our help there? Are we over-helping? And they just made them pay over and over and over again. And that's where you got to salute the Phoenix Mercury for taking this series to a degree. I love what the Lynx did in that game four. They were flying around the first quarter. Juan Smith was protecting the rim. They were taking away handoffs. They were keeping the ball in front. Jessica Shepherd was incredible. Courtney Williams getting to her spots. And then once Phoenix
Caleb McBride also just
I couldn't even get there. I was sequencing it, Nikias.
Oh, my.
Hit the fast forward button on me. I got you, buddy. No.
My apologies.
But no, once they saw Courtney Williams was trying to get to the mid-range, now she's able to play make. It was really good stuff. Caleb McBride was unreal in the third. Unfortunately, in the fourth, they couldn't get what they wanted because there was just a little bit of uncertainty. Phoenix has Alyssa Thomas, Satu, and Dewana Bonner defensively. They have size. So are you attacking Sammy Wickham? Are you allowing Kalia Copper to switch? Are you going to get to Jessica Shepherd in the post? Is it going to be a clean catch deep in position? Are you going to get an early action? So if you're just kind of late in the clock, now we're waiting for a pick and roll, it gets tricky. So I think the fourth quarters from Minnesota really cost them this series.
Yeah, I think to the game too, as we were watching that one live, it's just so many unforced turnovers from Minnesota in that third quarter as they were able to build up a lead. Like I was watching that game with you and I said like, ooh, well, this series was kind of fun. Game one was tight, and then game two has now turned into this. You know, after the second half of game one, it didn't into that first half and the way they closed it. It's like, well, looks like Minnesota is just going to continue being the best team in the league. This is kind of tough. I don't know if Phoenix has answers for this. To your point, Phoenix doesn't go away. And to Minnesota's side, we're just tossing the ball out of bounds. Like, opening possession of that third quarter was them generating a favorable switch. Caleb McBride coming off screen to the left side of the floor, and Courtney Williams just throws the ball out of bounds. Just a bad place pass. It's like, ooh, they ended up being kind of an early signal for what that quarter is going to be. Phoenix able to make a run, things like an 8-9 point game into the third quarter, and we're off to the races. And the Mercury ultimately able to get that game to that fourth quarter you mentioned there. Like, we'll just say the timeliness of Kalia Copper, Satu Sabli, and Dewana Bonner just in that game overall, but particularly in that quarter. Really popped for me just to bounce off of your point, Steve. Dewana Bonner closed that game out with her shot making. It was insane. Some key defensive stops for Kalia Copper. Like, remember, you know, talking to you while watching the game live, I was like, ooh, some of the off ball defense from Ka kind of stressing me out a little bit. But then she locked in, and you see what kind of defender she has been in the past when fully locked in, but ultimately still can be when she locks in. Like, there is just a level of, I won't say underrated, but for the purposes of this conversation, some underrated strength that she has. Like, she can slide up and down the positional spectrum a little bit more than you may anticipate. She is incredibly quick. She obviously has, like, the mental toughness. Like, she is not going to let anybody dog her out in an isolation or a post-up situation. So you have that. When Satu Sabli has her early prep work done, she can contain drives. And because of her size, she can defend multiple positions. Dewana Bonner will be tasked with defending a little bit of everyone, as she has been the last few years. Then you add in the Alyssa Thomas of it all. So even if you are trying to get at Sammy Wickham, to your point, Steve, they do just have this overall infrastructure to make it a little bit easier to deal with that. If you don't hit those buttons, now it's the Mercury in transition. You have to deal with, if you stop the transition opportunity, it's Alyssa Thomas, middle of the floor, let's go inverted, let's see what you do. If that doesn't work, Dewana Bonner could just bomb away from 29 feet. if he needed to. Satu Sabli, as we saw in the back half of this series, oh, you're going under. I'm comfortable just taking these pull-up threes and knocking them down. Kalia Copper, drives, pull-up middies, mixture of cuts if we're zooming out to the overall series. It was just really good, timely stuff. So while I started with Alyssa Thomas, a lot of players chimed in throughout this series, which has kind of been the theme for this Mercury group. And so they deserved a salute. Like, it was very impressive. And now they're what, 4 wins away from a title. First finals berth since 2021. It's really good stuff from Phoenix.
Yeah, they tightened the rotation for a reason. They knew what they wanted to do. They had an identity, and they got to it. I mean, I think the one thing is Satu Sabli made a lot of big shots over these last two series. I know there's been some whispers about Satu and shot selection, but you got to remember, this is a sandbox for a player that's very versatile and can do many different things. And so this is the payoff for the regular season of you have wiggle room to operate and take those pull-ups and attack and try and get downhill and explore the space. This is the payoff. This is why you put the work in so that, okay, if these shots are going down, we're really tough to deal with.
And I'll quickly raise my hand. I was one of the people that was like, I know Satu can do a lot. We had a good conversation about this, what, 2-3 weeks ago. We're like, I know she can do a lot. I would like a more refined kind of like shot slash play type diet for her to get the most efficient version of her. Because some of the early shots in the clock were like, I don't really love this. I know she can, but I don't really love this. But to your point, this is how you get these games. When you establish that level of trust in a player and they establish that level of comfort, if the context changes, they're still good. They're still comfortable. They're still aggressive. And this is what you get. So point for Steve once again.
Well, no, I will just remind all you shot diet truthers that certain shots are taken to try and unlock certain other things. And if you have one or two of those going at the same time, you become a lot tougher to guard. Just kind of, paint that in the back of the brain.
I think that's fair. I'm sure we're going to have similar conversations on the NBA side about certain forwards that are very talented. But we will save that for later days. And just quickly on the Minnesota Lynx, again, obviously we're going to have a lot more to talk about in the Mercury. Well, first, we have to figure out who the Mercury are even playing in the finals. Again, we'll find that out later tonight. Before this Lynx group, obviously, you don't want to have your season end like this. You don't want the feet injury. You don't want the Cheryl Reeves suspension. Ultimately, after that regular season, you don't want to lose in the second round. You're coming off of a finals loss. It was a revenge tour for everyone. Not the ending that you wanted. And so I'm not going to pacify like a loss or anything like that. But I do just want to say, I really enjoyed watching this Lynx group this year hit another level of lock-in on both ends of the floor. And I mentioned it at the top of this segment, but first in offense, first in defense, like that is just, I think that has happened 9 times in W history, somewhere in there. Like, it's not something that happens frequently. And that's even spread across like 4 total franchises, the Lynx being one of them. It's really hard to be that good, especially coming off of a season where you leveled up to this degree and you have the anticipation of, okay, well, teams know what we're going to do. They're trying to take you off the table. They got better without like considerably changing like the core of what they are. They added around the margins. You did get the midseason trade of Dejanay Carrington. And it also stinks that they just did not have her for this one. I think her defense, her drives, her cutting could have been impactful in the series. But man, that level of ball movement, that level of body movement, the unselfishness, and Fee ultimately didn't win MVP. But good gracious, man, her shot making, her playmaking, her usage as a screener, the way Cheryl Reed moved Fee on the board, period, was a joy to watch. Watching Courtney Williams, it feels kind of disrespectful to say like expand her range. It's not like she's never taken a three before, but lean more into the threes in addition to the mid-range scoring that we have grown accustomed to. The playmaking got better for her. Kayla McBride, good defense, really good three-point shooting, great shot making overall. That really popped in that game four against Phoenix. You see, like, oh, she can bomb away. She can get to these drives and these scoops. She can operate in the middle of the floor as well. Alanna Smith having the co-defensive player of the year season that she had. Jessica Shepherd moving people with her screens, the high post playmaking from her and Natisha Heidemann, her drives, her shot making. This was just a really good, really fun, very well coached group. And this should be more about, to Steve's earlier comment, the Mercury taking this more than like denigrating what this Lynx team was. They had their spots where they could have been better. As Steve mentioned, the fourth quarters, game 2, game 4, they could have, and they likely feel they should have closed out better. So they're not without criticism, but I don't want this Lynx season to be lost overall. This was incredible basketball from them.
Oh, they've been tremendous for two consecutive years. A machine on both ends of the court. It's a shame it kind of ended this way for them health-wise. But an incredibly fun team to watch. I mean, that's a team that moves the ball, punishes you for your mistakes, makes you sustain defense, gets after on the other end. Beautiful basketball was played by the Minnesota Lynx over the last 2 years.
Yeah. Just want to get a quick salute. And again, we'll see Phoenix in a little bit. And you will see us in a little bit. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to bounce back with a little award talk. And we are back. We did get some award news over the past couple of days. The all-rookie team was announced on the W side. Making that team, Paige Bueckers, this year's Rookie of the Year, Sonya Citron from the Washington Mystics, Kiki Iriafin, also from the Washington Mystics, Janelle Salon from the Golden State Valkyries, and Dominique Malanga from the Seattle Storm. Steve, I certainly have thoughts. Before I get into those thoughts, any surprises for you? Were you okay with the all-rookie team?
I was a little surprised Salon got the nod, to be honest. I thought that maybe the gap would take her out. I had Paige, Citron, Kiki, Malanga, and Sonya Rivers in my head. But Janelle Salon played a key role for that Valkyries team, especially when you look at the type of shots that she had to create and the type of defense that she had to play. So I don't necessarily have any issues. Now you, Nikias Duncan, do you have any issues or have any surprises with the all-rookie team?
I guess to answer the latter part first, there were no surprises for me on the Raw rookie team, especially in light of conversations that we've had about all rookie teams throughout the season. So was I surprised by the results? No, I was not. Paige speaks for herself. Sonya Citron speaks for herself. Kiki Rayfin speaks for herself. The last two spots were always going to be like a combination of like four or five players. Like you mentioned, Sonya Rivers, Layla Lacan came on as well. Obviously, you have Janelle Salon, Dominique Malanga. The fifth person for me, as we just talked about the Phoenix Mercury, and I guess I can say that Mercury announces for here, would have been Monika Koamokani. And as we've talked about throughout the regular season, and as I've like tweeted out on my timeline, those tweets are out there. Then obviously people are welcome to disagree. The official list disagrees with me. But, you know, it's generally been spoken about that Paige, Kiki, Sonya are just the locks for the all-rookie teams. My fourth lock for all-rookie team would have been Monika Koamokani, starting guard for the Phoenix Mercury. You don't get to set the tone defensively the way this Mercury team did without what Monika Koamokani was doing at the point of attack. Alyssa Thomas, obviously the best defender on that group, but that early ball pressure, that screen navigation for her was incredibly important. Her pick and roll defense overall, incredibly important to this Phoenix group. She was one of the best on-ball defenders that we had in the league this year. I think she put together an all-defense caliber season as a rookie. And so for me, she should have been on this team. And again, as I said, she was like my fourth lock. I would have been okay with her making it over Janelle or Dominique Malanga to get on the all-rookie team. I know when we have these discussions about players getting snubbed and robbed, yada, yada, the natural counter is like, okay, well, who are you taking off? I would have been fine with Monique over either one of those because of her two-way impact and her two-way impact on what is now a finals team. But obviously, this is a regular season award during the regular season. Very impactful play for her. I think the one drawback to her case, as she's not the natural, we're going to get 15 points a game or whatever. She shot 43% from three pre-All-Star break. She shot about 36% from three post-All-Star break. Was dealing with injuries and things like that. And that coincided with Dominique Malanga finally getting consistent minutes and not just playing well, but playing well enough to close games out for that Seattle Storm team over Ezzie Madmigor, who I have a high level of respect for. Dom turned up second half of the year. Averaged 11 and 7 post All-Star rate for Dominique Malanga. Just much better numbers than what Monika Koamokani did. And to Steve's point about Janelle Salon, which I tweeted out like what my fake, I don't have an official vote. I tweeted out my fake ballot like after the official ones were due. My five would have been Paige, Sonya, Kiki, Janelle, and Monique. So again, not at all upset that Janelle made it. I do think her scoring, she had to defend a lot of different player types this year too, especially once Kayla Thornton went down. And so the tough shot making for Janelle and the shooting that she provided for a team that took a lot of threes but didn't have a lot of great shooters on the roster, very important for that Valkyries group. And so again, I understand how you get there. I just think what Monique did was kind of slept on this season. And it would have been nice to see her rewarded for the season that she put together.
I have one retort to your starting guard for the Phoenix Mercury. Who's the closing guard for the Phoenix Mercury?
It depends. Sometimes that's Sammy Wickham. Sometimes that's Monique Okoro-Makani.
How many fourth quarter minutes did Monique Okoro-Makani play in the last three games of the series?
Let's find out. I know it's lower because they went more with Sammy. But I can get that for you. I don't mind.
It's eight.
Eight, okay. There you go.
Okay, you got any more in the rant? In the rant bag, big dog? This is rather tame.
Because I didn't want you to, like, leave if I went, like, full, you know, full upset. But no, like, I guess the one thing that I'd say just on the Phoenix front in general, like, I have been annoyed with the way that Alyssa Thomas is discussed for, you know, going back to the Sundays. And I feel, you know, going back to, what was it, 2023, where she had the most first place votes for MVP, but ultimately didn't win it. We get so stuck on the triple doubles for Alyssa Thomas, which are obviously incredible and historic, and nobody does it like her. But we get stuck on the 3x10 of it all without really digging into how she's getting the points, how she's getting the rebounds and what they lead to, how she's getting the assists. And I just wish that we, again, collectively, because I think we talk a lot about Alyssa Thomas and we do so in depth, but I just wish there was a greater understanding of what Alyssa Thomas is, what she does, and how it influences everyone.
How did you bring this back to Alyssa Thomas?
Because it's really, I have, it's a broader Mercury point. I started with Alyssa Thomas because she's naturally the head of this. We get to the Monique of it all, and I think her box score is not going to pop like others. And so we're not understanding how she's influencing both ends of the floor, particularly the defensive end of the floor. Because I think it's, 0.7 steals per game? If you're not watching what Monique does, you're going to see that, okay, she might be fine, but I don't think she's near elite or anything like that. It's just like, I just want a greater understanding of things that may not show up in the box score for both of them.
I'm going to give some slight pushback.
That's fine.
People should think differently about the game of basketball. I encourage it. I think it's a good thing. Maybe you don't value what Monique Okoro-Makani brings to the table because you value what Alyssa Thomas does. And so she's on a good team.
But I guess that's where I would offer, more pushback, I am not opposed to people thinking differently. My thing is, and this is something, I feel like you've said something similar, at least understand what the other portion of it is. If you want to tell me, and I was having this conversation on the timeline with someone, literally yesterday, with Janelle versus Monique. I personally value the Monique season higher than Janelle's. And again, on my fake ballot, I would have had both, to be clear. But I personally value the Monique season a little bit higher, but I understand the Janelle case. And so if you're just telling me, I understand the Monique case, I see what she does with the full court pressure defense, the screen navigation, the shooting, the screen, yada, yada, yada. I put higher value in the scoring within a tough context for Janelle, just to use that example from that conversation. I don't mind that. I would disagree, but I get that. That's fair. That's fine. My pushback is more so do you understand the Monique case? With Alyssa Thomas and Depoy, for example, do you understand that while she doesn't get block numbers, she is insane because of the space that she takes away and and the turnover she's able to force and the things she's able to clean up on the back end? Do you understand that even if you value the Ezzy Matbagore shot blocking more or the Asia Wilson shot blocking more? That's more of what I'm going in. Not that you have to view her like I view her.
Yeah, but what if they just don't value that defensively?
I would disagree. I feel like that's part of it.
The larger point is there's multiple ways to slice the cake when it comes to basketball, guys.
Yes, I agree with you on that. I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
Then we can move on. Jesus Christ.
Okay, well, that is a great time to take another break. We'll be back as we shift to the NBA side. We got media days happening, or have happened this week. So we'll react to some of those once we're back. And we are back. It is time to shift to the NBA side. And Steve, we're approaching preseason basketball this weekend. The NBA season is back in, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks at this point? Right around the corner, man. Media days are here. Had a lot on Monday. We had some, like, over the weekend as well. But
come on, man. Hold on. Hold on. Yeah, turn up. It's media day. It's optimism. It's sunshine. It's rainbows. It's muscle watch. I'll do whatever it takes to win. I'm happy to be back. It's new faces, new places. It's old faces, old places. I want to be here for life. Don't sleep on us. You know the vibes.
This is true.
Give it a week. Give it a week. Give it some practices. Give it some preseason games. We'll see how that looks. But Lord, this is the most optimistic time of the year for 75% of the fan base.
Well, Steve, that begs the question. What about the other 25%?
They met.
Oh. You know what? Fair enough. You know, on that front, I do kind of wonder how Warrior fans are feeling right now. Like, they have to just
do
be...
You?
They have to be the most annoyed people on the planet right now, right? Like, we're entering media day this week, and we have, nine players on the roster. We have multiple signing commitments that aren't official yet because we are still trying to figure out if Jonathan Kuminga is going to be signed and traded, if he's going to take on a 2 or 3 year deal, if he's going to actually get the player option that he wants in some of these negotiations. Is he going to sign the qualifying offer, which I think he has to do so by Wednesday? And we got some reporting earlier this week that the Warriors are not going to be extending that qualifying offer deadline. So we are going to get answers within the next 24, 36 hours. Ooh, that's a lot. It's kind of wild to go through an entire offseason with this just kind of lingering. And now you're entering media day / training camp and all the good stuff with this just kind of lingering. And Kuminga was not at Warriors media day, naturally. I'm curious to see what the resolution is going to be on that front. That just seems pretty important for the Warriors as they literally look to fill out their roster. Excited for Al Horford and De'Anthony Melton and Gary Payton II, et cetera, to eventually don the jerseys. But, ooh-wee. That's odd. That is odd. Okay, so as for the actual optimistic piece, and I'll go first with a couple. We'll bounce back and forth. Steve, I told you this the other day. I am so excited about the Atlanta Hawks this year.
Oh,
I am also terrified by the Atlanta Hawks this year.
Why?
I'm terrified because of how excited I am, which is probably not a great answer, but it is my honest answer.
That sounds like real Eagles fan behavior.
And hey, Philly special in the back, you know, you see it. In all seriousness, you know, I am a huge Trae Young fan and the scoring and playmaking blend that he provides. Huge Jalen Johnson fan. And it was very cool watching him play at an all-star level last year before getting hurt. They add Kristaps Porzingis. They add Nikhil Alexander-Walker. And just in general, like, you bring it back Dyson Daniels, who put together an all-defense first-team season, if not a DPOY caliber season, with all of the turnover generation that he had, screen navigation that he had. This is just a very talented group. And I think if you are building a team around Trae Young, you want size, you want athleticism, you want defense. The Hawks seem to have all of that. And so I am very ready to go all in on one. I think the Hawks versus the Magic for the division is going to be interesting. We have division previews coming a little bit later, but not in this episode, but just in general coming later. So we'll get into it. But I'm excited to watch the Hawks and the Magic this year. Watch them duke it out for the top of the Southeast Division. I think the Hawks can absolutely take it. And I'm also just like, ooh, if Trae Young tweaks an ankle, or just in general, when Trae Young goes to the bench, what is this initiation going to look like? What is some of this three-point shooting going to look like? Kristaps Porzingis, very impactful rim protector. He has turned into, over the last 2 or 3 years, one of the most efficient post scorers that we have in the league. We know what kind of pick and pop ability he has. we also don't know when he's going to play. Like, one of the media day quotes to come from Kristaps was like, I feel better. I still don't quite know what I had last year, which seems terrifying, which could beg just a larger societal discussion, does not fit for this podcast, but that's scary to me. So like, there are just a lot of health things with this Hawks group. There's some non-trade initiation things. Like, I'm high on Jalen Johnson, but like, if you want to look at the on-off stuff with the Jalen minutes without Trey on the floor, eh. You know what I mean? But Jalen seems healthy. Said he worked out with LeBron James this offseason. Was impressed by the humbleness of LeBron, being able to pick his brain and things like that. So, very excited for the Hawks, but I'm also just like, am I getting excited for the Hawks to finish like 43-39? And then I'm just annoyed half the year because three of the rotation players I'm super excited about got hurt. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's very much a me thing because I love them and I'm excited. I'm scared, Steve. I'm scared. I'll be honest, I'm scared.
All right. A reappearance from Atlanta's very own. I think for me, I mean, it's just, yeah, give it time. Hey, let's see what they try and make out of it. Do they have a system for when Trey's not on the floor? What lineup combinations do they put together? Can they shoot the ball? How do defenses treat them? Do they just land on switching? Does that impact them? There's a lot of different things that can go into play. I will say this about the Eastern Conference in general.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be some teams that surprise you in the East because there's a lot of teams that have opportunity to grab this. There's a lot of room to navigate in the Eastern Conference right now. And so you listen to the way Toronto's talking.
Yes.
You listen to the way Detroit's talking. There are teams that believe they have a pretty good opportunity. And so I'm very intrigued to see who gets off to a hot start and what that success does to their buy-in and what that opens up for them. Because if a Toronto gets off to a hot start, what's that look like? Detroit gets off to a hot start, what's that look like? You know, the Knicks start slow, what's that look like? That there's different paths. So like, the Hawks are still going to earn it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're right. You were absolutely right on that. Actually, can we pause on Detroit and Toronto for a little bit? I'm glad you brought those two teams up. One, on the Detroit front, it feels like everybody in the building is incredibly excited about Ausar Thompson. And like, similar things on the Houston side for Amen Thompson.
Well, I was about to say, can we pause? It just sounds like everyone's excited for the Thompsons in general.
Yeah. I think that is fair. Like, naturally, just general like jump shot questions about them, but everything else, driving, playmaking, defense, like Amen Thompson made an all defensive team last year, and rightfully so, as one of the best wing defenders that we had in the league. Very quietly, and should have been louder, but very quietly, on a per-possession basis, Ausar Thompson defended at an all-defense level. I think if he doesn't miss time and plays more minutes, and I don't think the minutes portion is going to be a problem this season, especially with how J.B. Bickerstaff and everyone else is talking about him, Ausar should make an all-defense team next year if he performs at a similar level. He is very good. He doesn't navigate screens. He teleports across them. You have the weak side shot blocking from him when they want to play him at the four, which I am intrigued to see what like the Jalen plus Ausar front court looks like when they kind of downsize per se up front. It's hard not to be excited about Detroit. I know, Steve, you've in particular have been beating the Detroit drum for a few seasons now, and they really popped off last year, but you have been a big fan of the build. I've been more muted in my praise. Like, I like elements of this, but hey, what is this front court going to be? What is the shooting going to be? They proved it very loudly what this can be. And so if Ausar does take the next step, and again, if he's just healthier, like, that is just a better basketball team. And you can look at, if you want to get into like the on-off numbers with Ausar, you can. But just in general, his defense, his athleticism, his rebounding in general, but particularly on the offensive end, you stash him in the dunker spot, you have to put a body, you have to account two for him because he will jump over you or just slither in for extra opportunities on that front. The playmaking there, like, one of the things J.B. Bickerstaff has talked about, we want to put the ball in Ausar's hand a little bit more. And so I'm curious to see like how that part of his game expands. But this Detroit team had a good offseason. Again, coming off the playoff berth, where they very well could have won that Knicks series if a couple of things go differently. They're going to be good. I think they're going to be good.
Well, I think either Thompson, I think the biggest thing that I'm looking forward to seeing is what is the growth confidence-wise offensively, and how many different ways can you impact playmaking? So I think a lot of times people are just assuming it's initiating, right? And that's fantastic. Get those reps. Get some high pick and roll. That's fantastic. What do dribble handoffs look like? Mm-hmm. How are you turning the corner to get a paint touch? Are you driving closeouts? Are you getting closeouts? Are you letting it fly when the defense is not closing out? Are you putting together more of the elements what we saw last year for both of them? that's what I'm most intrigued by, because I think they can both be very impactful for their respective teams in a way that's going to make it difficult, because now, oh, we have another guy who can get in the paint. Oh, mm-hmm. We have to deal with this in a different way on top of the defensive athleticism. So it should be fun stuff.
I think that's fair. Like, I think something that we talked about last postseason with Amen in particular was him trying to find his comfort as a scorer in that Warriors series. And then when it clicked midway through, just like, oh, no, he's here now. Okay, here are the drives. Here are some of these pull-ups. Here are some of these awkward-looking floaters, but, like, they're going in for him. And on top of the defense, like, okay, it took him a few games. So I do wonder, the end of that series into the offseason, now into training camp and stuff, like, how much of that carries over? What kind of leap do we see? To your point, Steve, so I'm not going to hang there too long, but I'm excited for him. And for Toronto, you know, elite defense post-All-Star break. Don't ask who's in the rotation, though. But no, in all seriousness, elite defense post-All-Star break. And I think you look at that roster, there's a lot of lift. There's a lot of versatility on this team, Steve. I think with as weird as the Scottie Barnes season was last year, I think he was trying to find himself as a scorer in addition to the initiating. They put him in different spots offensively. He had his own injuries to deal with. Defensively, played at an incredibly high level. Like, one of the things that has kind of annoyed me about the Scottie Barnes experience defensively is when he's been tasked with guarding, like, point guards. I'm just like, Scottie's versatile. I don't know if this is the best context for him. I don't really want him on shifty guards. Let him switch 3-5, sometimes 2-5 if you have to. But in general, use the IQ, use the instincts, use the length. We want him closer to the rim. We want him blowing stuff off on the backside. And we saw more of that last year, I feel. Wasn't tasked with dealing with guards as much. That combined with more consistent effort on that end, you could argue he played at an all-defense level. Again, there are only 10 spots. But you can tell, at his best, he was absolutely at that level. And he and the team has kind of talked about his defense being how important it's going to be heading into this next season. So I am curious to see, one, how healthy he's going to be. I certainly want him to be healthier this season. Because if the Raptors, who are now going to have Brandon Ingram, traded for him but didn't play, now you add Brandon Ingram to this mix, you have RJ Barrett, you hope to see a step taken for Emmanuel quickly. We see what another year of Grady Dick looks like. Oshai Abaji showed good stuff. Jamal Shedd ball pressure coming off the bench. Like, they just have a lot of pieces that I enjoy. If they are able to put this together, I think they have lineups that can be defensively slanted and that could be incredibly tough for teams to deal with. I think they have some offensively slanted lineups that they can get into that could put pressure on teams. And they can invert actions with Scottie as a ball handler. They can go invert it with RJ as a ball handler if you want to. Darko already has an element of just off-ball movement in that half-court offense that I enjoy. My biggest question for Toronto, aside from health, is just what is going to be the lineup blend for them? Are they able to find lineups that are going to be good on both ends? Or are they just going to have to play offense, defense to a degree to kind of find their level? If they're able to hit it, you could argue they just have like 11, 12 just rotation players. Like, you could argue they just won't put a bad player on the floor for their minutes. That's going to be a tough team to deal with. They are very high on my intrigue list.
Looking at Kaius Duncan, first pod to already sound in the horn for the Atlanta Hawks and the Toronto Raptors. I wonder if there's another Eastern Conference team on this list. I think for me with Toronto, I just want to see what they attempt to do offensively because of the amount of talent they have in the theoretical starting lineup. Mm-hmm. And the different ways that they can use them in movement, and the ways that, you know, if you're able to put pressure, get two on the ball, go side to side, they have a bunch of guys who can start plays and finish plays. So I want to see how that comes together with what we've seen Darko try and do over the last couple of years in Toronto with movement, maybe not necessarily having the complete lineup to necessarily emphasize or punish at certain points. So that's probably the one thing I want to see with the Toronto Raptors is how complete can this offense be and how quickly can they get going? And it's gonna irk me when everyone is like, hey, Brandon Ingram's pretty good off movement. I'm like, I've been saying that.
Yeah, to your point, the problem isn't that Brandon can't work off movement. The problem is that we wanted Brandon to work off movement more and for Brandon to want to work off movement more. So it should not surprise anyone if he pops in a new environment. And again, just the general help point on Toronto, we hope Brandon Ingram is able to put together, you know, 65, 70, 75 games this year. He's very talented. The scoring should help in the half court. The playmaking, He made strides during his stint in New Orleans. That should help. That should take pressure off of Scottie Barnes having to initiate a bunch. And if you do have a situation where Scottie and Brandon Ingram can both handle these kind of loads, you bring back Jakob Poeltl, who still remains one of the most underrated centers that we have in the league. But that's someone you could toss to in the high post and get into handoffs and stuff with. That should take pressure off of like RJ Barrett having to make on-ball decisions. We can just get him off handoffs, get him attacking downhill. Emmanuel Quickley, who I think is going to be one of the more important players to keep tabs of this year. Like, he's a very big swing player for this Raptors group, just in general, if you're looking at the Eastern Conference landscape. If he pops, the Raptors could absolutely be in, like, this top 10, top 8, top 6 hunt. If he doesn't, it gets tougher for them. But, again, you have those kind of initiation points. A man quickly can flow off ball a little bit more. You don't need him to be traditional point guard. He can just boogie behind these handoffs, get to these floaters, get into some of these pull-ups. There you go. So, I'm with you. I am with you. Toronto's going to be interesting. While we're on the East, two quick things from me. One, I'll say very quickly because I don't want to annoy you more than I already have on this podcast episode. Positive buzz coming out of Charlotte, I will just say. Come on. This is why I said I was going to be quick. I'll just say LaMelo Ball. Between Jeff Peterson, Charles Lee, a lot of applause for what LaMelo Ball's offseason was and the diligence that he'd worked with. He does look noticeably bigger slash stronger. And I think that strength within the context of what we've been talking about for years at this point, Steve, is just how often is LaMelo pressuring the rim? And when he does get into the paint, how comfortable are his shot attempts? Are these the awkward floaters that he can make because he has insane touch? Or is he actually getting into the foul drawing bag? Is he actually getting deeper into the teeth of the defense and really putting pressure on defenses, opening up some of those kicks because he's an insane passer as well? If he is, again, he's bulked up. If he is a better driver, that should just unlock everything else and make everything else easier for him. And that naturally helps Charlotte, right? That makes life easier for Brandon Miller. That makes life easier. I'm just intrigued. And the fact that the higher-ups have been discomplimentary of the LaMelo work ethic and just some of the growth in leadership, like Spencer Dinwiddie talked a little bit about what the ideal LaMelo season looks like. Yes, Spencer Dinwiddie is a member of the Charlotte Hornets, but it's just I'm just like, okay, like I know I could do the Hornets thing, so I'm not going to do that to you today. And we have, you know, we got a Southeast preview, so I can save some stuff there, but intrigue in Charlotte. And then the last thing for me on the East before we shift to the other conference, a quote from Miles Turner, this coming from Bucks lead. I'm embracing change, embracing this cool part of my career. I'm heading into my prime. I'm in a city now that wants to celebrate me. There's a great quote that goes, go where you're celebrated. I feel like that's here. People are excited to have me here. This combined with like 17 other things that popped from the Bucks media day, which very quickly, get well soon, Giannis was not there. Recovering from COVID, that is still happening. So, like, I hope Giannis is okay and is able to join the team soon. It's been a lot of stuff from the Miles Turner side since he joined the Milwaukee Bucks. And I ain't necessarily saying, like, he did anything, like, quote-unquote wrong. But, like, maybe the constant trade rumors in Indy hit him more than we gave credit to. Because it's been a lot of, man, not just I love being here in Milwaukee, but ooh, boy, I'm finally in a spot where I can compete for a championship fresh off of a finals berth. And just a lot of things about appreciation and being celebrated. And again, not anything wrong with that. Everyone wants to be celebrated and loved and adored to a certain degree. But it's just like, man, if I'm a Pacer fan that rocked with Miles Turner, I'm just like, what the heck, man? What is all of this? I rock with you. And so I think the first Bucks-Pacers matchup is in early November. I know I'll be locked in on League Pass. I'm sure he still gets a video package. I don't think it's gone that deep or anything like that. But I think the reaction is going to be more mixed. Than, you know, he already went to a division rival. But I would imagine the reaction is probably going to skew a little bit more negative than anticipated at this point. Because it's been a lot from that side. So I will. Okay. We'll keep an eye on that. Steve, anything else stand out to you about media day? What's some Western Conference teams that hit you?
Well, the big thing for me was continuity. Okay. I think it's interesting. If you look at Minnesota and Oklahoma City and Denver, three teams in different kind of zones, areas, looking to contend or repeat. But you got Chris Finch, who on continuity was quoted saying, continuity is only good when it pays dividends early. Other than that, you're just like everybody else. Now, you contrast that with Anthony Edwards, who said, we kind of have a cheat code because we've been playing together. I thought that was interesting. You have Lou Dort talking about the continuity of OKC. I don't think anything should change. Obviously, it's pretty much the same team. We're all comfortable with one another. We just spent a whole year together on our side, just keep doing the same stuff, always improve throughout the season. And then you have Denver with Coach David Adelman and a lot of pieces returning, new pieces there, and understanding that we can't necessarily do some of the same stuff we did last year. We have to expand and get better and develop our bench and give them a system and have different optionality and versatility. And it got me thinking, because I think continuity goes back and forth as a buzzword. Like, sometimes it's a strength, sometimes it's a setup for being stagnant as a team. I think on one hand, continuity gives you a leg up to a degree. You know what you're capable of as a team. You know what your weaknesses are. You know what your strengths are, where you need to get to, what you need to improve on. You can get to your base a little bit quicker, which is always important. Regular season, you're just looking to set your base and exactly, you know, go through the trials and tribulations, the highs and lows, figure out what you need to improve on and be ready to go in the playoffs. On the other hand, you still need that base. And you can't copy and paste what happened last year to this year automatically. You have to put the work back in to get back to that level. So if you were a really good defensive team, you have to put the work in to make sure you remain a really good defensive team. You can't just automatically assume the defense is going to be there. Let's fix X, Y, and Z. And so it gets really interesting, especially when we talk about the East, but in the Western Conference, one, a lot of good teams out there, in my opinion. Two, you get off to a hot start, you put yourself in the driver's seat, and that's so important. I think particularly in the West, you can put yourself in a different area. Teams are going to have to chase you. So which team is going to be able to kind of get there? And you see everyone's kind of single-minded. James Harden, want to win a championship. Luka Doncic, want to win a championship. Dallas, hey, if we get everyone healthy, can't see why we can't win a championship. OKC wants to, but, you know, we'll quieter about it.
understood.
But you know, that's kind of my theme when it comes to media day and just balancing how important it is for a team to be ready to embark on a new journey.
Oh, I like that. I think to your earlier continuity point, I can kind of go back and forth. Hey Steve, ask a Heat fan what continuity means to them. You can imagine what kind of reaction you get over the past few seasons. But to that end, actually, I want to bounce back on the Minnesota front because you mentioned Chris Finch, you mentioned Anthony Edwards. I'm intrigued by Anthony Edwards heading into this year. Always am because he's super talented. But you got the report, I think, last week from Shams Charania on NBA Today talking about Anthony Edwards focusing his offseason training on just working in the mid-post area, enhancing his low-post game. He wants more counters in the middle of the floor. That part's interesting. Anthony Edwards also talking about, I think, using a different type of like ball handling gloves. Said his handle feels as best as it ever has. And it's like, ooh, if Anthony Edwards can access his spots easier, and as we have seen across multiple playoff runs now, he has gotten very good at diagnosing, okay, this is what defenses want to do to me. Here are my counters. Something that you in particular, Steve, have done a great job of explaining over the past couple of postseasons. If he can access spots easier because of the handle, if teams work to wall off the paint against him again, and now he can just put his back to the basket and toss in these Kobe fades with more regularity, you send two, he can then again play make out of that spot. That's a leveling up of Anthony Edwards that should be scary for the rest of the Western Conference. And as we've talked about, teams in the West, like OKC should be there barring health. Denver should be there barring health. The Fred VanVleet injury for Houston freaking sucks. But if they still have that foundation of defense and now you have Kevin Durant in tow, they're going to be there. I think, especially before the Fred injury, like those seem to be like the three teams that were getting the most conversation, just generally speaking. Here's Minnesota that has just been really good pretty much every year. At least over the last few, here's our top 10 or better defense. Here's our offense that has a hitch in it sometimes in the half court, but we do have Anthony Edwards that can spearhead a lot for us. And once we get to the postseason, we can do a lot. Minnesota shouldn't be slept on, especially if Anthony Edwards takes this kind of step, especially if Julius Randle in addition to just being very good at basketball and coming off of a great season in Minnesota, particularly that second half when he came back from injury, he just has more mental clarity now and is just in a better spot personally, which, seriously, huge salute to Julius Randle. Always appreciate when athletes are kind of transparent about what they're going through and how they're working through it and things like that. I'm very glad that he's just in a better spot, period. But even to the basketball side, if you're just getting this version of Julius Randle now, hey, man, Minnesota's going to be a problem for folks. They say, you know, always going to have love for Jaden McDaniels and what he provides on both ends. But, like, that's a group you have to keep an eye on. So, continuity or not, that's a talented group out there. Also, we're not going to talk a lot about Kawhi. I did kind of chuckle at Steve already said, like, I have nothing on the Kawhi front. I don't have anything. We will find out the information when we find out the information. I will just say that I did kind of laugh and Kawhi hit the, well, actually, I was still owed. So, I mean, if we're going to talk about it, we could talk about it. That got a laugh out of me. I'd say on the Laker front, like, one, it is just cool that LeBron is still doing this. And it's also cool when you catch LeBron in, like, his candid moods on media days or just any kind of press setting for him. It's just cool to watch that guy just talk hoop and just talk in general. So, like, that part's cool. Obviously, a lot of expectations out in Los Angeles for the Lakers and the Clippers, for that matter. So I'm excited about that portion. I'm trying to think, is there anything else that, like, super popular? Oh, actually had this in my notes. So Victor Wembanyama is healthy, which is first and foremost very important. Glad he's okay. Scary end of the season for him, but he seems to be all systems go. He is coming off of one of the most unique off seasons that we've seen from a star level talent in a while. He was quite literally all over the place doing different things. We talked about his experience.
That man went on 17 side quests. and then came back and said, I assure you, no one has trained harder than me. And I'm like, all right, buckle up.
Mm-hmm. And as we're on Muscle Watch, he does. The arms are more defined, a little bit bulkier. And so that certainly helps as we talk about the Victor Wembanyama drives and some of the post defense and absorbing contact on drives. Because we know with the wingspan, like, he just blocks stuff anyway. That's scary. But, like, just getting into, like, life perspective stuff for Wimby was really cool to listen to, because it is fair to, you know, breaking news, athletes are people. Who knew? But, like, it was just cool just listening to him kind of give his own perspective on what he went through last year in the recovery and what that did to him personally and kind of spearheaded him. Steve said, taking on all these side quests, like, hey, man, I want to have a full life. It is not just about basketball, but was also quickly to remind you, hey, I did a lot of work this offseason. I worked on some stuff. I worked on my body. And so more mental clarity for Wimby, in addition to him being incredibly good at basketball. We did also get news from Spurs Media Day. De'Aaron Fox dealing with a hamstring injury, so may not be ready for the start of the regular season. That part obviously stinks. I think the combination between him and Wimby is always going to be important to track this year. Their pick and roll chemistry, their handoff chemistry, when they're going to invert things for Wimby with Fox as a screener, all the things. So get well soon, De'Aaron Fox. But if we do legitimately get Wimby is just a no doubt about it top five player in the league now, with a healthier De'Aaron Fox, with a more consistent Devin Vassell, with Stephon Castle with a better jumper, the Spurs can also be a problem in the Western Conference. Not going to put them in, like, the contender tier yet, but that's going to be another team that's going to be fighting for a playoff spot. So excited to see what happens with San Antonio. Trying to think, is there anything else in my notes that I didn't hit on from earlier? Steve, did you have anything else that kind of caught your eye or your ear?
I have free throws for you.
Oh, bet. What you got?
If Denver can be a top 10 defense, can they win a championship?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right. So between Brandon Ingram, RJ Barrett, and Scottie Barnes and their quotes, they heard everything people had to say, right?
Absolutely. They sure did.
Who is more important to be healthy for their team at the start of the season, De'Aaron Fox or Jalen Suggs?
Jalen Suggs for me.
Really?
Why? I think the defense speaks for itself. Like, I think he has an argument for the best guard defender in sports. And if the 3-point shooting that we saw to kick off last season is any semblance of real, that helps Orlando a lot. especially as you get into some of the staggering, like if it's going to be him and Bane or him plus Franz, and then you keep Bane and Paolo together, whatever Orlando wants to do on that front. If Jalen Suggs is more of a consistent scoring threat in addition to the defense that he's already going to provide, like that's big. And I just don't think, as much as I enjoy Anthony Black and the defense is really strong, defenses just do not care about him in the same way on the offensive end. And it's not like Jalen Suggs is getting two on the ball to begin with. So like, I think that's a bigger thing for me.
Okay. DeAndre Ayton said people say this is his last chance. Do you agree?
That seems stark. Like, I'm not going to say that he hasn't been told that or that he didn't see that. I would very much disagree with that.
Okay. There we go. Jeremy Grant said he does not expect to come off the bench. Are you surprised?
How much time we got? I am not surprised that he feels that way, though. And like,
Oh my.
This is why I asked how much time we had. It's just odd because now Portland has wings and they have bigs and like get well soon, Scoot. But like that does just kind of pencil in Drew as a starter at this point. Like they have a lot of different ways to go. And so like I would love to just put Jeremy Grant in at the four because I think he still can score in the middle of the floor. Like he still can get to the free throw line. He is still a good 3-point shooter. There's value there. I am curious to see which level of defense we get from Jeremy Grant this year. We've seen it when it's good. We've seen it when he, for the 2K players, he got one adrenaline bar left out of the three. We've seen what that looks like sometimes. Okay. So like, you know, okay. If he's locked in, this was a Portland group that I guess, as a surprise to some folks, they were really good defensively last year, especially once the calendar turned. There's a foundation of defense there. I think his scoring can be very important here. So I can certainly see the argument for him to start. But also, if the second half of Denny is real, if Tamani Kamara is going to defend like this, you ain't starting three wings. You know what I mean? So I want to see what level of buy-in Jeremy Grant has. The talent speaks for itself. The contract certainly speaks for itself. We're getting into like lineup politics and stuff like that, but I want to see the buy-in for Jeremy Grant. That's all I got.
And we have secured a fourth consecutive year of a Nekias Jeremy Grant rant. Let's go. More belief in the Blazers defensive lineups or the Rockets tall lineups?
Ooh, I'm glad you brought this up because that was one of the things that caught me. Ime Udoka saying that we could put out one of the biggest lineups in NBA history. I was like, you know what? You sure can. What do you mean? You have Amen and Jabari and KD and Steve. Hey, man. I might, that Houston lineup speaks to me with all due respect to Tamani Kamara and Drew Holiday. And hey, we should just be getting more Donovan Klingon minutes. And he's just one of the best rim protectors that we have. And like the defensive on offs for him are kind of insane. I might flip back to Portland actually. That's a spine of a defense, buddy. Drew up top, Tamani in the middle. You got Donovan Klingon. Hey, man.
Got him.
Yeah, I'll go Portland. That's nasty. I am excited about that big lineup in Houston, but yeah, that's a.
All right, we're almost done here. Austin Reeves and Norman Powell both said they believe they could be all-stars. Who do you pick as more likely to do so?
This feels like Norm by default, just because of the pool / injuries. I mean, the West is just tough.
Okay.
I think Austin Reeves can absolutely play at an all-star level. At times last year, he did. So it's less that and it's more like what is the actual opportunity in terms of roster spots.
Fair. I had a feeling you would say that. More likely all-star, Zubac or Austin Reeves?
Darn. I guess first I need to see Zubac. I've seen the quotes of Zubac losing weight. I'm just like, this could mean he moves better and the Clippers can flow into more of the late switching with him. Also, he was an incredibly effective post scorer because when you did switch people onto Zubac, he just put you underneath the basket. So I hope that doesn't impact that too much.
I'm going to go Zoo.
Okay.
Better cut, Chris Paul or Kyle Kuzma?
Now, I didn't want to talk about this. I've seen the pictures of both. You know, like, you know, I ain't in room talk. It is almost time for haircuts and stuff. So I ain't, you know, I ain't putting too much on it. But I feel like my answer is no.
Okay.
All due respect.
Okay. Who's looking more? Who's looking forward to this year more? Paul George or DeMar DeRozan?
Should I give this to Paul? Well, it can't be worse, George.
That's fine. That's fair.
Sis. I think they'll both have some juice here. They want to prove that, like, I can still do this and also we can still do this.
Understood. More annoyed by their question, Stephen Curry, LeBron James, or Klay Thompson?
This feels like Klay in three. And this is where, if I could press pause very quickly, man. Media Day is a tricky one because, like, it's not completely serious. Like, there is room for lighthearted stuff within this context. But you do have to know what lighthearted stuff you can ask. Klay does not seem like the person that would be comfortable being asked about relationship stuff. From like a, he'll talk about boats and he'll talk about other stuff.
That man went right to, I'm ready to play 100 games. So I do every year.
Yeah, it's just like Klay, the fun of Klay is that he does a whole lot of stuff off the court and obviously still works incredibly hard. So like you can get into other stuff with Klay. Another thing about Klay and what we've learned about Klay off the floor in terms of like relationship stuff would lead me to believe that that is a question that I could get off at a media day, unless I already have like a years long relationship covering him slash the Warriors or whatever. And even then I'm probably like, can I catch you to the side type beat?
Okay. I understand it. Final question. Did you know Cleveland had water?
Well done, Steve. Well done. Yes, is my earnest answer. And I do wonder, like, on the context front, I wonder if that was just like they got like beaches, that type of beat, or if he was actually making like a water reference. Because like one is a lot different than the other. Obviously would be hyperbole either way, but the answer is yes. The answer is yes. One free throw for you, as I remember the one thing that I didn't hit on with the media stuff, Steve. In one corner, we have Asia Wilson and Bam Adebayo. In the other corner, we have Wendell Carter Jr. and Angel Reese. Who wins in a game to 11?
Oh, that's Bam and Asia.
Okay, there we go. Shout out to the media member that asked Wendell Carter Jr., who very happy to talk some W during this media day. Always makes the always very cool to see that. But yeah, Wendell said his squad is winning 11-0. That garnered some reaction. It's like, why? He wouldn't say anything else. Like, of course, man, he's going to say.
You know what? Real quick, before we need to hit the horns, but I'm just going to say real quick. Mm-hmm. Why are people surprised when you ask athletes a question about if they're going to do something well that they say, yes, I'm good at this. I'm going to win. Why is this shocking?
It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. I'm waiting on the one athlete where you ask something like that too. Like if Wendell would have popped out, like, Asian Band probably got like 11-7, but it really depends on who gets ball first and what kind of dribble limit we have. Like, it would be funny if we actually get one of those from somebody with a question like this. But to your point, like, these are athletes. Like, yes, they're going to think they're going to win. They think they're going to win a lot. That's what they do. That's how they got there. Yeah.
Yeah, that, speaking of got there, we need to get up out of there.
All right. Well, we will get out of here. We will be back on Friday. That's right. We'll be going twice a week. We are back in full form. But thank you for rocking with us on this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Also, the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Want to go ahead and subscribe? We're going to be there as well.
Yeah. You subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Watch it. Let's go. Turn up.
Let's go. Let's go. It's time to turn up. It's time to turn up. And it's time to turn up with The Dunker Spot. But you can follow me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. We'll still have the link in the description if you want to join our online Dunker Spot watch parties. Plenty of W hoops. And again, NBA preseason right around the corner, so we'll be tapping into the NBA season soon. So come chop it up with some cool folks. We're also doing gaming things and talking wrestling and food and all
get
kinds of stuff.
Get a new outro. Speed it up.
Come rock with us or else. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.